This is Down to Brass Tacks. Just let me clarify the situation here with respect to the prison. The prison at Dodds was opened on the 15th of October 2007. So any comment to the contrary that came from Alvin should really be corrected if you've had that on your mind. And the Supreme Court building was completed and operational in 2007. However, one of the people who is writing to us says that this is the reason why younger people have no interest in brass tacks, with people like the caller who was on at the time. Because the caller was said to be talking about the same old, my party, and it does nothing to address our current realities. The writer says we have a health crisis not of our making. We have a financial crisis as a result of that same crisis, meaning the health crisis. We've got job losses, and some unfairly, says the writer, as a cop-out by some employers. And therefore, what is happening is that the topics that are sometimes chosen by the political people miss the mark for other people in Barbados. Therefore, they get kind of uncomfortable sitting down and listening to a program where people who support the two political parties get involved in this tussle to assert who is right and who is wrong, when all these other issues are there. I suppose it can be argued that not enough work is done by various institutions, we the media included, in highlighting some of the other matters that are important. I'll tell you a very significant one that is right here before us. You see that discussion about hacking and how vulnerable companies are in this country? You know how much information can be compromised because we are now into the digital era. And all the information that I have at the moment suggests that we are in a situation where it is very, very serious. You know, hackers are also doing something really interesting, which is that they ask for ransom. They get into your system, and after they've gotten in, they say that if you want to get the passwords to get rid of the virus that they have put into your system, you have to pay them a lot of money to get it. That's where we are right now. And we need to be hearing a lot more about how companies in Barbados and the government of Barbados are going to work more quickly to protect people's information in the country. Because with COVID, you've seen that there has been a rush to do a lot more online. So our vulnerability is greater in that regard. So you could sit down and you could talk about roads, buses, and things like that. But they're not the only things that are really important in trying to move us forward. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, hi.
I'm going on, what is that? I hear everybody talking about work this place. Nobody tell us nothing about White Hill Road.
White Hill Road?
Yeah,
the government says it committed to improving White Hill Road. I mean, I really think that is a waste of taxpayers' money, but if...
Why you say so?
Why say so?
Yeah.
Because all indications are and have been that there is a constant movement underground out there. And whatever money you throw behind White Hill Road to appease the people who live down there is going to be wasted, because in next to no time, geologically, the earth is moving. Unless the government can tell us that it can link up with the Chinese and do something extraordinarily different, that will not happen. But all
Mr. Ellis,
the people in White Hill were asked to move to farmers. Some of them moved, and it appears a small group of them might have stayed. But out of the houses that people moved, other people moved into White Hill and made a mockery of the whole exercise.
Mr. Ellis, I live down
here. I ain't got the votes to get from any of you, so I can tell you that from what I have seen over the years, it don't make sense.
You live down here?
I've come down there. I came to White Hill. I brought geologists and stuff. I did a project a while ago when I used to do the program called 630. I came down there and because the road had already moved away, and we said, but we asked, what's going to happen here? The advice that we got was that this is not going to stop.
So what caused the road and water to move?
You tell me. I hear they got water underground and stuff.
I live in Mount Hall. I live in Wales. But I used that road to go to work when I used to go to work. The water may burst up there for about 4 or 5 months. You call the waterworks from day one to day out. They never come until the road get water soaked and the road jump out. If the waterworks had to come and fix that burst, man, that road would never break away. I live down here. I know it down here. Is it a landslip?
How many times did they fix that road since you've been living down there?
Wherever you see the road that break down or slip out.
So what about the houses that are falling off into the cliff?
The houses that
have been leaning into the cliff, those houses are as a result of the burst water, mate?
Yes.
So everything...
Yes, Mr. Ellis. George Murray. They call it George Murray. The road...
I just thought that the government... Why is it... Let me ask you this question then. Why is it that people were told to leave White Hill and go to farmers?
Yeah.
Why was that? And why didn't you go?
Let me tell you something. Since I was living here, nobody has ever come to me.
How long you been living there?
All my life.
So how come people left there and went to live in farmers and you don't know nothing about it?
Mister, they move out a few people from the... I said they ain't come to everybody, but I live down here. I am telling you, they don't hear.
Why did they move them?
Huh?
When they moved them, what they tell them?
I don't know what they tell them, but I am telling you.
Taxpayers' money was used to relocate people from White Hill to farmers.
At that time,
the argument was the same argument that is being used now. The road. The road was slipping away. I don't understand. I really don't understand the rationale.
What rationale?
For going back to go back to White Hill. How many people live in White Hill, though?
Yeah?
How many votes are going to White Hill?
Man, they got maybe 200 houses down here.
They got 200 houses and they got...
Maybe.
And all of those houses are occupied? No?
Yes.
And if you multiply the 200 by at least two.
Man, the vote in me just pay tax like any boy else.
But you tell me, I'm listening to you. I give you my position on it. Let me hear yours. You know, it is about hearing divergent views, so let me hear yours.
The government move who they want to move and leave back the rest and say that the rest don't want to move.
So you never had an opportunity to move, that's what you're saying.
No, I tell you, never had the opportunity to move. One boy never come to me and asked me to.
If you had the opportunity to move, would you?
Why not?
But that's curious.
I tell you, since I live over here, nobody has come to me.
So let me ask you, you're sitting down in a place where there's movement of the road and some of the houses slipping down into the gully. Because I've seen that with my own two eyes. All right? So, you're living in an area like that. Some of the people were asked to move, and relocated. And you never asked nobody, so what happened to me? Why can't I move? Something wrong with me? You never, what did you do?
The people that they don't want to move.
But I assume that there's a danger inherent in staying in a place where the land is slipping.
Man, there's no danger in waiting. That road can be fixed back.
All right then, well, I give you my view. You have yours.
I don't hear you.
Fair not enough.
I know, but never tell boy. Nobody has come to me and asked me to move. Nobody.
But you just said that if they ask you, you will move. So why?
So why are they ready to some and all?
No. If you are all of that comfortable, then you would say if they came to you, well, I don't need to move from here. I'm good enough where I am. Why would you want move then?
They didn't come to me.
Yeah, agreed. They didn't come. But if...
Right.
I understand what you say. They didn't come. All right? But clearly, you also recognize that there are certain dangers living in the place, right? You don't have any fear living in White Hill as it relates to land slippage. You
where
have
I
none.
Am living.
Pardon?
Where I am living.
Where you are living, your
house. I live in Mahal. Two districts.
Yeah, but they suffer. Well, basically, you don't have land slippage where you are.
No.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm good, thanks. I just called to make my contribution regarding the comment, any idiot can play a cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find this to be a rather unfortunate, distasteful, inconsiderate comment, which not only dishonors the contribution made to the institution that is cricket, but if we look at the verb to play, the meaning of the verb to play, according to the Collins English Dictionary, it says it is to occupy oneself in a recreation or sport, to fulfill a particular role in a team game, or to compete against someone in a game. And so, it not only discredits the individuals who play on the two teams, but cricket, the institution that it is cricket, involves persons like umpires, the sports journalists, the commentators, the administrators, physiotherapists, etc. And so, I find the comment rather unfortunate, and I would call on the Barbados Labour Party publicly apologize
for saying that. Let me ask you.
Nations yeah. of the world.
After you, after you have completed your statement, may I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
Is it true that any idiot could play cricket?
No.
All right, fine.
Because according to
any idiot can play cricket, but not any idiot can play it well.
No, any idiot, to my mind, any idiot can.
In the context of Barbados, any idiot can play cricket, but not any idiot can play it well. Of course, any idiot can be a politician too. But that doesn't mean that any idiot can be a good politician. You accept that?
Mr. Ellis, I do not accept the point that any idiot can play cricket.
Oh dear, well, I played cricket for years. All aspects of human endeavor will attract people who are classified as geniuses and some who are classified as idiots. So,
Mr. Ellis, hold on a minute.
But it is my point is that to excel at a game, you have to be far more than an idiot to be able to do it well.
Of course. But an idiot, would you agree with me, is a foolish, senseless person.
I suppose in Barbados, people go so deep. The vernacular, in the vernacular, you don't see him as a person who is just, as you have described.
That is the meaning according to the
I just
dictionary.
Have to find this thing fascinating. I mean, the kind of licks that this man get for this comment.
But no, Mr. Ellis, do you think that is an honorary comment to be made?
No, I think there's a politically insensitive comment to make. Even though, as I say to you, all sports and all a host of other human activities attract people that you may consider to be idiots, but at the same time, because you are into something, it doesn't mean that you can do it well. It takes somebody with skill and somebody with a degree, with some brain and stuff, to be an outstanding cricketer. I mean, I had the honor of listening to Sir Garfield Sobers one evening. I've been taking this talk for about 3 hours at what was then BET, talking about what it took to become the cricketer that he was.
Right.
And one of the most fascinating things was to listen to that whole discussion that night. One of the things he talked about was being able to pick up when a guy was going to bowl a bouncer and how the trajectory would change and that sort of thing. But that's... No idiot can pick up that, that is something that calls for skill and brain.
Right, that is why it was so unfortunate a comment to make in the context in which it was made. Because he was basically comparing two individuals, and that's the unfortunate, disrespectful and dishonorable thing about it.
Okay.
And so the Barbados Labour Party should publicly apologise to the cricketing nations of the world.
All right,
it's a rather unfortunate comment.
To the cricketing nations of the world?
Yeah.
Go and tell Imran, a special audience with Imran Khan to apologise?
No. You can do it online. You can do it anywhere.
Well, we apologise to cricketers all over the world because one politician got up and said that. The politician must take his licks as he's taking it now. I'm taking them now, but I don't know that to go that far now is to really blow this out of proportion.
But you agree with me that cricket is an institution?
But not deserving of apologizing to your work?
I didn't say to the world. I said to the cricketing nations.
To the cricketing nations of the world? The same thing, as far as I'm concerned.
It's an insult to all cricketers.
That ain't necessary. Anyhow.
Sorry. Anyhow,
yes.
Have a good day.
Thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks. I don't know if my producer saw how the fellas dealt with it online. They played the original comment and then they slowed it down. I said, wow. Down to brass tacks, hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm fine, right? I wanted to take you up on a comment you made
about what
this morning when you asked the question, because I was asking myself the same question.
Mm-hmm.
FT St. George by election is lacking any excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the reasons why it might appear that way is because most persons are of the opinion, both in the constituency and across Barbados, that the St. George by election is a foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is one of the reasons why I think that Starcom suppressing the discussion is just a tad bit contributing to it. But most persons are of the opinion that they already know where that seat will go. Because when you look at the pros and cons of the last election and the victory that was had there, I think it is said that they won the seat by something like 81% or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And to reverse that will take a momentous task. So I think that's one of the reasons why. I just want to talk to you a bit more now on the same-sex issue as regards the response by churches. Because as a Christian myself, I find the response of churches to the same-sex the presence of same-sex unions in the world a bit surprising. because one of the things that Jesus was asked when he was upon the earth, he was asked, what are the signs of your coming and the end of the world? And Jesus began to spell out a series of events, some of the stuff that we know called global warming. He talks about earthquakes in diverse places and tsunamis and all these kind of things. And then he says, as it was in the days of Lot and as it was in the days of Noah, people upon the earth will be living like that in the day that I am revealed in the clouds of heaven. Now, churches in Barbados are saying not about here. They don't want the same-sex unions to be on the earth. But if same-sex unions are not present and the Bible is unable to fulfill itself, then Jesus cannot come. Because same-sex unions will be present on the earth in the last days as one of the signs that we are living in the end. So I think the Christian church has got it a bit wrong. I think our job as Christians is to evangelize same-sex couples. But as far as saying that we don't want them about here and stuff, the Bible says that they will be here. They will be a part of the world. And our job is to preach Jesus to them. But they are a part of the signs of the end. I heard you talking about the robbery at Roy Smith's shop, which is up in the area where I live. And it's amazing that that robbery took place at 6:05 in the evening time. Now, the Bible also predicts that in the end, the hearts of men will grow wickedly and a whole lot of other signs. People will be selfish and covetous. They'll be lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. And all these things are signs that we are living in the end.
All right, sir. We're going to the Starcom Network News.
This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon to all of you. This person has raised this question of digital business, digital commercial business, because they're looking at the reference which has been made to hacking and the dangers inherent in that. So they want to know why, therefore, is there this quick march towards digital commercial business without serious due diligence? And they're saying that they are mentioning this in response to what they heard from a representative of the Barbados Banking Association yesterday, asserting on Brass Tacks that everybody, in short order, would have to embrace going digital, as the days of issuing checks would soon come to an end. Person says, however, I believe in the safety of the checking system. Once authenticity and proof are ascertained, checks are good to go and safe, as opposed to the digital process that is fraught with problems and many risks. One of my observations is that there are various ventures that we get into where, because of the push that is coming from various quarters, we get involved without necessarily being as adequately prepared as we should be. And that certainly has happened to a large extent with this issue of digitization. I mean, there are benefits to be had by going in that direction, but the amount of money and time and effort that must go into giving you cybersecurity is something that, to me, we haven't paid as much attention to as perhaps we should. And then, as I said earlier, there is the vital issue of data protection, which needs to be addressed. And I certainly hope that we can get a lot more of a focus on that going forward. Down to Brass Tacks, hello.
Hi, David, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, I guess so for now you would hear that any fool could be a hacker too.
Because, not any fool, any idiot.
Any idiot could be a hacker too. Because, you know, on Saturday, I received a WhatsApp message from a number that I've never, ever keyed into my group. And I was told I won $800,000. But the usual thing, you would have to send off certain information and communicate with them. So I got hacked there on my WhatsApp. So it's not only government and business persons that get hacked, but it's also individuals as well. And as you said, in terms of the cost of protection from these hackers, sometimes that cost can be a great cost as well. So I think we need, or there's a need to find a way of offering protection to the thousands of people who have these services and how they're going to protect themselves from these hackers as things go on. But that is not what I really wanted to make my contribution about, because the last time I spoke to you, I would have raised the question of the what I thought was then the independent senator.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned recently that it is nothing. There's nothing called an independent senator. And but I'm happy as the person resigned from that position. And let me say, I want to say how pleased I am for Mr. Hunt, because I know Mr. Hunt very well. So I would want to wish him best of luck in that new position or role that he will be in. But strange enough, from reading in the papers, it said that the letter coming from Government House informing the media that Mr. Hunt now will be the new independent senator. That is what come from that was reported in the paper. So it seems to me like there's still the word independent.
It is clearly recognized that a person is classified as an independent senator once that person is appointed by the Governor General and not by either of the two established political parties.
As I thought over the years, maybe this.
That's correct.
So my next question to you then, there's an independent senator who is also a non-resident ambassador to Suriname working on behalf of the government. So what would happen in a case like that? And then I heard from the president of the Senate that there's another senator that is assigned to some overseas duties or whatever the case is, but we haven't heard anything about that as well neither. So
the question is, because a person has been assigned to a diplomatic task, does that make the person less independent? I think you have to look at that. Is it on the same footing as somebody who actually says, I am now a declared member of a political party? Because, the Governor General is supposed to be appointing people who are representing various interest groups. Mm-hmm. Now, it is true to say that when that lady was appointed, she was in no diplomatic post.
Right.
So your argument is that once you've been given a diplomatic post, that automatically says it's a political appointment, and therefore, once you are politically appointed, you can no longer be classified as independent? Is that what you're saying?
That's my view, because then you are operating within the interest of the government. Within the interest of the government. That is my personal view. I don't know either. So I say it that way. So long as you get a diplomatic posting from the government, then you connect it to the government. So And I always had the view that once the government leave, in terms of, you know, the change of government, then you should freely leave as well too, because it's a political appointment. So I think in that case that, you know, something called common sense and decency and such, like, and not greed. You know, we could play out these things sometimes. Now, my other area quickly of concern is the debate of this, the proposed debate in the St. George by-election.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted, because you're a person who's broadcasting over the years, so you think these questions were centered around the issues pertaining to the constituency of St. George North? Or you think these questions that would be filled to the candidates would be wide and varied and such like, or just strictly St. George North?
I can't be sure.
What would be your view? You would want to cast a view on it then?
I'm going to have to declare something to you. And that's that I've been requested to sit as one of the moderators in and I honestly, at this stage, I'm now formulating how the direction of the questions in the areas that I've been asked to pose questions. And that is one of the issues, is to what number of questions would go to candidates, focus exclusively on St. George North, and to what extent would you also want to touch on what is something that is at the national level. So, I can't tell you that right now. I haven't formulated that.
But seeing now that you have a role to play, then I don't think you can speak too much.
So what do you think is appropriate?
I think appropriate is questions will be pertaining to the role of St. George Knox.
Exclusively?
Because that is where the issue
is. So when you choose a person for St. George North, they don't have to speak about national issues too? They can only talk about St. George North? They can only represent...
No. I'm not saying that.
So if you accept that, isn't it appropriate to hear whether that person got ahead for national issues too?
yes, but as you know, in elective politics, based on national issues sometimes are not paramount in terms of elections machinery, that parochial issues are the ones that are critical to the voters.
Parochial issues have a bearing on national issues and national issues on parochial issues.
Well, it all depends on the individual views then on national issues.
You elect an MP. Your MP is a minister. You know, he was elected by you to deal with your parochial issues. But the next thing you know, the Prime Minister puts that person in the cabinet where they're dealing with all the big issues, and sometimes in such a way that they're so busy they can't even deal with your parochial issues. So, that's how it works.
Yeah, I agree. I would be fully aware of that. That person would have to have knowledge of both local and international issues as well. But in the end, that person that is contesting that post, they're there to represent the interests of the constituents. Mm. So I think that should be more... more critical in terms of the questions coming from...
I think it's something that in dealing with it, you have to do the necessary research and look across the board at what are coming at you as the principal issues and stuff like that, and then determine from there, how and where you're going to go. That's a judgment call that you can't just make off the top of your head like that.
Okay. Now, the other question, would you leave out any of the candidates, or all the candidates should be part of this?
I think all the candidates are supposed to be. The body that is organizing it, which would be the journalist body, is seeking to make sure that all the candidates are involved.
I saw one guy saying that he's a softy.
Yeah, but as far as I'm aware, they have been reaching out to him as well.
But you could only be a candidate when you pay you $250. So once you have that, then you're actually a candidate.
You know that there's no self-respecting organization in the country involved in this exercise would pursue it in such a way as to be accused of discriminating against one person or the other. Mm. So,
yeah,
I think we haven't reached that kind of stage where you would expect that kind of behavior. I'm assured that they are making the effort, notwithstanding what might have been reported.
But all I would say to you then, sir, is just be careful with how you tread and, make sure you find the issues that...
I have to do that every day. I have to do that every day when I sit down here.
And not really. You don't got to worry about when you sit in there, because you could always, shift certain questions and such like. But the questions... are the concerns in the debate should more of the concerns of the residents of St. George North. That is my view. All right,
and
sir?
You are entitled to your view.
Yes, I've always respected yours, and I think you would always respect mine. So yeah, I don't have a problem.
In truth of the fact, sir, it is hard to see this range of issues that would be peculiar to any one constituency in Barbados that wouldn't touch the rest of us.
I agree, but
if you listen to the debate right now, they are discussing issues that are as relevant to them as they are to all the other constituencies in Barbados. Most of them are. Okay?
Yeah. But I'm selecting the candidate for now.
I heard you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? It's now 12:58, 2 minutes before 1 o'clock. Hello. You're on the air. Hello.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
A blessed day to you, sir.
I hope you had a wonderful weekend.
Oh, yes, I certainly hope so. And the country as well. I trust that Barbados had even though we had some very disturbing news over the weekend and so on, I still hope that Barbados would not only bear these things in mind, but strive to improve and to do better, you know? Because these things are troubling, very troubling. And I think the whole nation are concerned about it. You know, these are troubling times. Ms. Ellis, I am today, I am concerned. In fact, I am embarrassed that as a Barbadian, anyone would stand on a political platform and say the demeaning thing that they would have said about another Barbadian, that meaning Mr. Reefer.
The cricketer?
Pardon?
You mean what was said about the cricketer?
Yes. Mm. Mr. Ellis, that is demeaning, and it, look, I'm saying this.
You think it comes anywhere near what happened at the stadium in the election campaign when the whole platform of the Democratic Labour Party abused Ms. Molly?
Let me ask you this. If that was bad.
No, I didn't ask you. Somebody wrote me earlier and said, it's rude to answer a question with a question. But if it's rude for me to answer a question with a question, I asked you just now whether it comes anywhere near to that night of abuse that occurred in the general election campaign down by the stadium.
You know what you're now attempting to do?
Make two rights a wrong.
No, you're now attempting
to divert. Wrongs are right, rather.
You are now trying to divert what has happened.
No. I am not diverting anything because
Democratic Party was punished for that.
Sir. And I'm not diverting anything because
they were punished.
I have already said that it was not appropriate.
Did the people not punish the Democratic Party for that? Were they not punished for that?
Yeah, but you know, the truth
of
the matter.
And were they not heavily criticized?
And Mr. Bradshaw is being heavily criticized, and he is being punished.
But now you're trying to distract me.
I just put into you what others put to me.
Listen to me. There are people, and I'm talking about members of the Barbados Labour Party who believe that Barbadians are gullible and they would take and accept anything. And this is what I am getting here. And here you are, rather than letting me condemn and punish that which was said, you seeking to divert me when the people had already spoken about what happened then. The people did what they had to do then because then that was disrespectful and it was punished. And I am saying to you that if you can belittle a Barbadian in this manner, then I'm saying the people of St. George North should punish this when they go to the poll. Do you know why? Because then you are demeaning a Barbadian and a resident and a person who has a family history in St. George North. And you would seek to play it down? I am not going to play it down. It's wrong.
Well, I don't know that I played it down. I only asked you one question. I wanted you to tell me how it ranked against something that occurred in the last general election campaign. And you have already said to me that it was bad enough that the people of Barbados punished the Democratic Labour Party for it.
That's right. So therefore...
But that's all you needed to do to answer the question. All this was indignation over being asked the question.
I'm saying to you, I am going to go on to strengthen what I've just said by making another statement and another observation. Because if you can say things to people and believe that Barbadians should accept it because of who said it, it is more than wrong, Miss Ellis.
But who says that? What has been said to suggest that people must
abstain? I'm not saying that you said that. I'm saying to you that...
The Labour Party said that?
Look, when it is being glossed over, and I get the impression that there are those who would prefer you not to speak about it. I'm telling you this, see? I believe that we ought to be respectful to each other and show it, and not only say it, but show it, because we're all human beings and we all are concerned for each other and for our country. But when you could do something like this, and then people will seem to think that there's nothing to it. How could you do that? How could they do that? And I'm saying to you, the people...
I know one thing. They're dealing with a political campaign. This is politics.
Yes.
And, you know, when a man gets on the platform and makes a politically incorrect statement, he can expect that it will be hammered. And, you know, and that's exactly what is happening in this instance.
As I said before,
once you get up on that platform and you make your speech, you need to be prepared to take the blows that will come with it.